Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Hi, welcome to an edition of Speaking of Reliability. I'm Adam Barrett.
And this is Fred Schenkelberg.
Hey, Fred. Today, you and I started a conversation, and I threw in this idea that I've implemented, and it seemed to have struck your curiosity, and so we hit record.
Yep. And so you mentioned this concept called intent anchor, and I know you live on a small lake and have a boat that you keep talking about your engine on it and stuff, so it has to have something to do with boating.
Close.
It's a nautical word. Come on.
It is a nautical word, anchoring. Yeah, exactly. Well, I named it because it kind of does the same thing. You know, that's the same reason why you throw your anchor over your boat, is to keep it in place even though things are changing. Well, if you hold on to the rope.
Just throwing the anchor over doesn't really help. Doesn't work as well.
Yeah, right. So this came about because of things I saw happening at design freezes, where we'd get to a design freeze and find issue with trying to figure out if a tool or a result from a test or an analysis should stop the design freeze, or if that gate should be pushed out farther. And what I figured out is that it's the freeze really shouldn't be binary. The freeze should be what I call a chill, right? You should have a chilling phase is really what happens, but we don't acknowledge it, mm-hmm. is that things get firmer and firmer and more difficult to move as you get closer to the freeze, right? I mean, it's not like everything's free to move until the day of the design freeze review. It's, you know, if I say I want to change something major a week before it, that's a lot more serious of an argument I have to make than if it's 3 months before it.
Yeah. You see, clever designers will design. I see it with electronics, is they'll add devices on circuit boards to mitigate radiation coming off the board, because one of the steps for many electronics is to make sure it doesn't irradiate in different frequencies that affect other circuitry nearby or whatever. And especially if it's FCC controlled, it's got to pass that in radiation emission piece of it. And one way to control that is put a whole bunch of capacitors on it, so everything's decoupled, everything's, you know, sorted out. But the circuit board itself is very hard to change. I mean, and it's expensive to relay out a board and recut it. And once you get going into production and making lots of prototypes, you pretty much want that circuit board to stay stable, because in some cases, it's either very expensive or very time consuming to recreate or create a new one. And so these designers would populate all kinds of extra parts on it. And then it's much easier to say, well, if I take this component off, I don't have to change anything. I just take the component off. And so it shows cost reduction. It mitigates the potential risk of not having the right decoupling at the right place, but it's easy to change later. So the concept is that designers would say, I understand the intent is that we want to freeze, but I need more flexibility because we're not to the point where I can actually know if this is going to work yet or not. And so I'll design in things that are easy to change later.
Yeah. Well, you're describing a really nice luxury that's very specific to PCB board designers that doesn't go across the board, right? To have that.
Well, the same in molds, right? If you have a big chunk of steel and you're cutting a mold in it, that I've seen mechanical engineers that will say, if I make an error here and it's not the right size, I can always cut the mold to make this part a little, you know, add a little more material to this area, but I don't know if I need it or not. So I'm going to cut the mold smaller than I need and later take that same tool and recut it rather than try to add stuff to it.
No, I get what you're saying. And that's great for that one little specific, you know, mechanical type of design feature, but that doesn't go across the board for all things that you design. Sometimes changes are quite dramatic, right? That's pretty much just a technique with regard to, you know, casting or plastic injection molding and trying to decide light versus, you know, structure.
Right. But that's the idea, though, is that you have to figure out what are those things that we really can't change. Let's lock those down soon. Right.
Right.
And then,
but I was going to go after something more trying to mitigate ending up in that situation.
Okay.
As much.
Okay.
So,
well, I know how to solve this, Adam. It's easy. Instead of having a 3-month design window, let's make it 3 years, and we got all kinds of time. We can do it whatever we want. Yeah, there we go. Just set problem solved.
Speaking of reliability, let's go to commercial. Got to commercial.
That's right.
Solve. What do you want to talk about next? Let's talk about the economy. We'll fix that.
Yeah. Okay. Piece of cake.
There's lots of, you know, tools and techniques that people use to obviously, you know, deal with that, because that is a big challenge. Of course, you don't plan anything perfectly the first time. So I'm throwing another method in the ring, then we'll say. I'm not obviously not solving the problem across the board. I'm going after a specific issue associated with reliability, we'll say.
Okay.
You've described a few solutions, the way that they are, you know, addressing the design side. But that approach, you know, the approach there generally was creating the margin effectively, whether it's real estate on a PCB board or margin in the thickness, you know, of a part or shape of a part, so that you have the margin to make an adjustment within features where it has minimal impact to schedule.
Right.
So with deciding on testing and the information coming back from testing helping with these different decisions, actually this kind of feeds into if you'd want to do those other things. I saw value more in kind of a control structure and creating this idea of basically what I'm bringing into focus is something that was kind of done abstractly. And the idea of having two anchors, everything starts with an anchor. There's an anchor as to where it started and there's an anchor to where it delivers.
Right.
And as long as those two are kept in reference and not allowed to, you know, drift, we can do a lot better job of measuring the value it's going to deliver and the feedback it's providing, because reliability, you know, half of the tools are about measuring, and to keep track of where that measurement is most valuable and should be connected. So if you combine that with the idea of the chill, where things get more and more firm, you can then take that information to a method that balances the improvement, the value of the improvement to the design versus the value of the detriment to the program. So I've actually also formulated to a method I call PEREA, program risk effects analysis. That's a derivative, obviously, of FMEA. Mm-hmm. But the idea is that, as you said, the challenge is with that electrical PC board or the mold is there's benefit to the design if I make this change. The counter argument is there's harm to the program if you make that change. You're going to delay us. It's going to cost more.
Right.
So it's connecting those to not being as abstract. You've described methods to then minimize that cost, but there still, you know, is a cost, which is, of course, great if you can. But by using this anchoring method and keeping the intent that the tool was implemented for, you know, locked in and the delivery point locked in, you can now continuously evaluate each of the changes that it's driving and balance it between the benefit of the change versus the benefit of the or detriment to the program, which is really what a design freeze is for, right? A design freeze is a go, no go, that there's so much damage, we shouldn't go beyond this phase versus not. And here's a way to do it progressively instead of just waiting to that one day where there's that big, you know, basically the design freeze day is a free for all, you know, cage match of people fighting and arguing. And that doesn't make a lot of sense when there was indications progressively leading up to it of if things were going to work out okay or not.
Yeah. No, I think you're putting a name in making and in bringing into focus something that I see teams do pretty naturally. Right. We decide early on, are we going to use aluminum or plastic for the case? I mean, and are we going to use a custom ASIC or are we going to use off the shelf thing?
Wait, do we do that quickly or does that happen? A lot of that information comes from testing and activities we've set in motion that provide that information. Whether or not you're going to use aluminum isn't decided. It might be based on the tests and the facts that it fractures and the reliability.
What I'm thinking of is that when at product concept, right, there's a lot of unknowns or uncertainties. Even if it's the derivative product, it's like, well, how's the market changing? How's this changing? What features that's we put in here? But some of the structure is already decided early on. And oftentimes reliability is not even involved in those discussions, which is a shame, right? We're going to invent 15 new technologies for this product. Well, there's a little bit of risk there, right? So let's think through, what do we need to know when? And so at an overall structure for development of a product, it starts with, well, what's the boundaries of this thing? How heavy is it going to be? Or what color is it going to be? What's the important thing? What if we use these components, can we make it profitable? All of those things are pretty much decided on day one when the concept gets rolled out. And then you create a set of requirements and you hand it off to engineering teams and they go work out the details. And then like you're suggesting is that gets slowly take shape as you go through the program. But there's some things you just don't know until you got it almost all completely built. And then you put it all together and say, that's not working. Let me adjust this. Let me change that. And if it's, oh, we got the wrong engine in here, or we put the mounts in backwards so it doesn't connect, that's a big mistake. We're going to have to fix that. And it's very expensive. But if it's, oh, we just need a, 1 millimeter shaved off of this side and then we got it balanced, that's, it's not a huge deal. It's not a big deal. But I think that process is pretty natural as you go through the development process from concept to past delivery. It slowly gets, I think the point is that the design freeze is the wrong term for it, right? It's let's start chilling it right from the start and recognize that's what we're doing. And we're going to lock these things in as we go as a set of milestones as we get closer to going to production.
Right, exactly. Like, we're not acknowledging the actual process we do. We're faking it to pretend that it is this hard gate. So that, you've captured that correctly, that I'm not inventing a new method from scratch that has to be introduced and taught. It's taking what we really naturally do and, firming it up and bringing it into focus so that we can all do it together and have actual mechanisms that acknowledge these kind of abstract discussions.
Yeah. And I think part of it, I think the phase gate approach is a nice concept, but it's too rigid. We don't go from concept to design phase or from design to manufacturing phase, for example, on one day.
Yeah. It's important. It just doesn't have enough resolution.
Yeah. Right? But I think
you have to have it.
What I thought was the idea was, instead of the anchor as start and end, it's these, I would set anchors at milestones, like the phase gate part, but recognize that it's an intention. It's not a do or die. It's not on today, we're going to decide whether this is the way we're going to do this forever. This is the intent, is to have that discussion and nail down 70% of the design so that we can go cut molds and we can go, contract for the key components. And some of the parts are a long lead time. We got to decide on those pretty early. So it's recognizing the chilling of the design, I think is the right term, as you go through it. But I would hit those anchors. I would put multiple anchors in saying, hey, we need to have this 10% worked out by this date and 50% solid by this date and so on. I think that would be a way to go at it.
Right. So the reason why I structured the way I did with the anchors, meaning that they don't move, is those are the bookends, right? Because that's the first thing you have to establish when you want to create a scale for something. I mean, if you think about it, with an FMEA, what's the first thing you do when you're making your severity, occurrence, or detectability scales? What's the first thing you do?
Yeah. You say, what's the high and the low?
Right. Is it 1 to 10? Is it 1 to 5? Is it, whatever.
Yeah.
So since we're talking about timeline and how it affects a range of how you perceive something, it gets firmer as it goes on. Mm-hmm. We need to have an anchor at each end to effectively create that gradient in between. And it was those anchors that were always missing to create the gradient. That's why the gradient always floated around. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I created this idea of having the two bookends that it kind of really came into focus and could be an actual part of the process. And that seemed to succeed.
Yeah, I'm just hesitant because the end date anchor is 50-50 in most organizations I've ever seen. And it's known that, oh yeah, if something comes up, we're going to delay. We're not tied to, you know, the holiday market, for example, or we don't have a major conference. We have to have a product launch.
These are for each tool though. So this is for hall testing, reliability growth testing, sorry, life testing. Right. I mean, there is an expiration date on the value of that.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's what it's for. It's not for the whole program. It's for these individual tools to then fit within the program schedule in a way that anchors how their value gradient changes.
Yeah, yeah. It's very true. If you do like an accelerated life test and you find and you're going to get results a year after the product's been shipping, it's of a pretty much a diminished value.
Well, just ask the customer at that point. I mean, why do it? They're going to find out before you will, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
They're ahead of you.
That was my first idea when I first got asked to run an accelerated test the very first time. My boss came in and said, hey, can you figure out if this will last for 20 years? I says, yeah, sure. Where's it going to be installed? And he says, Northern Italy. All right, I'll go live in Northern Italy for 20 years and I'll let you know.
Right.
And he said, no, we're not doing that.
No.
Right. Yeah. I had to ask. I had to try it. So I thought.
Oh, definitely worth the shot.
Yeah. And we did have somebody that our product was going to be put, the product we were working on was going to be put into a new application in Hawaii. And two engineers actually convinced the marketing guy, I think they were all in this together, to fund each other to make a proposal so the three of them would go to Hawaii for a month to, check on the application and the environment and use. Yeah, they got a great time.
Well played.
Yeah. Sometimes I get to go to the other building and that's about it.
Right. Yeah. I guess the only thing worse than that is I designed robots that the military was going to use. And when they decided to redirect the program, those seven robots got sent to Hawaii to just do like be on a military base doing stuff. I'm like, why did they get to go retire in Hawaii? How come we all did? Stupid robots are in Hawaii. So it's just doing stuff.
Well, I don't know. You got to think about this. Is that your end point, is to retire in Hawaii? Because in the Army, years and years ago, I was in the Army, and one of the destinations that many people wanted to go to was Hawaii to get stationed there. And any of my colleagues and friends that were stationed there said it's great for the first 2 months. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it's island fever. There's only so many beaches you can go to.
All right. I feel better. Maybe the robots aren't having a good time anymore.
That's right.
Have so many Mai Tais before your joints lock up and it the alcohol dissolves your oil that circulates your bearings.
Well, it's speaking of the environment, is they said anything, material wise, fabrics, canvases, cloths, you know, your shoes, anything, because of the humidity and salt air, just deteriorated very, very quickly. Cars were a joke. They just fell apart. It was, you know, everything was in a state of decay because it's a hot, humid environment. And it's a chemical playground for breaking things down.
It's an accelerated life test, the whole place.
The whole place, yeah. So I would take the advantage of, you can maybe work out the details of saying, well, I need to go to Hawaii for a month to check on the robustness of these robots to see how they perform. Yeah, it's that classic environmental test.
I'll pitch the idea. I'll see what happens.
There you go. Good luck with that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So if you know of a great place that you want to check your product and Adam wants to go there,
reach out.
There you go.
I'm on my way.
And along the way, he can also then give you guys some hints and tips that before his book comes out that talks about this intent anchor idea is to, you know, how's your program in using this? Are you doing halt when it's got high value? For example, are you running your program so that it actually is within the bounds of these anchors and all that good stuff? So that would be a good thing to do.
I think so.
Yeah. Cool. So you can reach out to us, ask questions, get hints and tips from Adam about what's coming up in his book. And you can do that at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR or on LinkedIn or on our about pages. We've got our emails there. get a hold of us, and we'd love to hear from you. If how is it going, and do you have your anchors firmly in place and using those to keep your boat from running ashore?
Hold on to the rope. Hold on to the rope.
That's right. All right. Well, thanks, Adam. So, do you have a ETA on this book, or is it still kind of a work in progress?
Well, I mean, I finished writing it like back in November. I've been doing some rewrite because it's for executive leadership, mm-hmm. which I tend to write like an engineer for engineers. Like mm-hmm. the past book was very technical. So I've had somebody help me kind of change it into what I'm calling more human language. Mm-hmm. And then Wiley is going to, I'm sure, do their copy edit. So I would imagine, you know, a few more months, but this year.
Okay, that'd be great. We'll look forward to that. And we'll have to get you on Dare to Know to plug it some more and get deep dive into the book when it's closer to lunchtime.
Sounds good.
All right, cool. Thanks, Adam. Talk to you later.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.